Mr. Wilmot, Real 6. We're talking about your time at Chippenham Camp, and in June 43, you went then to Rudston, outside Bridlington. Now, in this period, you mentioned earlier, we didn't really pick up on it, these false alarms of overseas postings. Could you talk a bit about that?
At our level, we just didn't know exactly what was happening, but the impression we got was that we were ready to go to war now. We trained for 3 years. We weren't going to be training anymore. We trained and trained and trained. Something was going to happen, and we were then going to be going abroad. The only place we could have gone to these days with the tanks was North Africa. And so we were training for this North Africa. And I can remember at least two or three embarkation leaves, whether they were in Chippenham, Rudston, or outside Bury St Edmunds. We remember in Bury St Edmunds because it was north of me to get the train. And we got these embarkation leaves to go back home for a few days, and it seemed fine for us. But it was always along the same lines. We were always training, but never going. In one of the panic times, we actually started to go. Our tanks were ready. Our first line reinforcements, we had first line reinforcements that was with us. They went ahead of us, and they actually went on the ship, and we never saw them again. They landed in North Africa in the Netherlands zone, Clark. We never saw these first line reinforcements. That was our backup people. So this was the thing that was happening, and we were just always going to be going, and we were just on our toes. And then back to training again.
Did that damage morale? I mean, you say you had these concerts to improve morale, but did these cancellations damage morale? Did people want to get on with it? Or
no, I think we'd had so many of them now, really, that we really accepted them as part and parcel of what was going on in the country. The war was, people were fighting and dying day by day, but you must remember, we've been training now since 39. It was said then that we're going to keep us for the victory parade. That was the we'll never fire a shot in England. We'll be definitely kept.
When did people mind? I mean, because in the end, you were safe enough in England, as opposed to.
Absolutely. I mean, all along I kept bringing back the thing that we were training for a job. But the job wasn't necessarily to go out and fight the war. We were just training. We were training and being trained soldiers. And I was training to be this, that, and the next one. But nobody ever said, there's a gun, go and shoot somebody with it. And the war was going further and further away from us. And this is a theme which kept coming into mind. Well, what are we doing now? I was called up in 39, all 40, all 41, 42, and you're into 43. And we'd never been anywhere. Other people, friends who had called up and been killed by now, could have gone into other regiments. And we were all seemed to be different. It was funny.
But you didn't really mind?
No, we didn't mind. As I say, there was this idea, again, because of the comradeship and the get-togetherness of the regiment, we didn't mind at all, no. And there was always something happening, as you say. We did this and we did that. And the concert in Chippenham, I remember, was a big thing, because it took ages to put on, ages to organise, but I imagine the HQ thought, at least we're going to keep them busy for a couple of months, away from taking down guns, stripping them down, putting them up, taking down vehicles, putting them back again. That was all we were seeking to do.
Now, the next thing is the move to Rudston. What was the setup at Rudston?
I can only say about Rudston that I don't know where I was, but I came back to Rudston. And we were stationed at Rudston outside, and the squadron went on a great big exercise, but I didn't go. I remember being back in the billets at Rudston, looking after things. I didn't go on it at all. But the squadron went on.
And where were you set up at Rudston? Was it a camp or...?
It was Nissen Huts. I believe they're still there because somebody was down there and saw them. Yeah.
And other than the exercise, anything else you remember about your time there?
We moved into Bridlington after Rudston, the town itself, and we were in billets there. It's a great sergeant's mess in a big house. And I had another little house for myself when there was a store house.
Had you got used to the sergeant's mess by then?
Yes, I had, I thought.
Would you go to it?
Fun?
What did it offer you then?
It was something to go at night. I was never a heavy drinker at all. I mean, shandies were my thing. I didn't get involved. And the female people of the species, I never got involved with that for some reason or other. I had other things to do. And anything that took my mind off it didn't seem like that was right. But it made a lot of difference to some of the sergeant majors, certainly the RSM. Another job I had with the Saudis made good, and especially in Bridlington, was I was responsible for putting someone into the mess, they're on it. You know, like a sergeant. Sergeant Butter, you're in the mess for a month, sir. You're in the month. So I had to stock him in and stock him out, take his money, bank his money, and all this kind of stuff that was happening. And one of the great things I always remember, because RSMs were always a pain in the neck to me.
Where was that?
Well, RSM, and wherever there was a sergeant's mess, and we had an RSM who was not a territorial ever, there were always old soldier boys. I always found IOUs appearing across the counter, which of course I had to destroy when I was doing my balancing on route, because it never made any difference anyway. We'd come and say, all the round of drinks, and just say IOU, and hand it to the sergeant who was in charge of the mess, you see. And when he was going on manoeuvring, he always wanted a lot of money, and he never had any credits. I found this indicative with RSMs all over, you know. Never had any money, and always wanted a great big wage to go. I'll be going on holiday, I'll leave quartermaster, and I'll be needing this. And I said, here we go again. Because I could no more, because there was a system of you knew everybody's virtual situation, and you used to have to send up for a list of credits, like money in the bank, you see. You never had any money in the bank. But anyway, the sergeants, of course, went into the mess, and for the month that they were on, they were in charge. I would stock them in other words, so I would count the beer would be in bottles anyway, and a bottle of whiskey was 20 nips, so at the nips, whatever the price was, I turned it into money. I took the money from them, put another bottle, and there it was. I can remember Sergeant Buddy, who's dead. Great man, good man in the bar, he must have got to the pump. And Sergeant Buddy would go in, and he would get the money from him, and at the end of the month, cashing Sergeant Buddy was a ritual. And I said, right, Sergeant Buddy, here we are now. I put you in, and I've taken this amount from you, and how much do you want to give me to go out here? Like, and I would balance it, and I'd say, no, you're short. Short? Short, Colin? Short? Just a minute. And you put his hand in a pocket, and you pull like something, and put it down. And I said, no, you're still short, Mum. So he went through this, all his pockets, and eventually I said, but you're still short. He said, my God, this is my own money now. And he'd bring out his last bit of money and put it down, this is my own money. And that was the way the sergeant's mess was. So we're getting these people back. Honest, but they just did it their own way.
Well, while you were there, it wouldn't have affected you much, but the Shermans were coming in.
Yes, that's right, they were coming in. It didn't affect me much then, because as I said, we didn't have live ammunition, we understand. Now, by that time, I stopped going to shootouts. My last place shooting attack was Lenny Head in December 41, which I said I remember clearly because it was on the Sunday. December 7th, 1970.
That's when you were with Cooper as a signal sergeant.
And by now, they were going to Lady Head in Scotland. I never went to Lady Head, but they were always sending squads up to Lady Head to fire Shermans in Lady Head.
And what did people think of the Sherman? I mean, what did you think of the Sherman? I mean, did you see it as an improvement?
Well, I mean, I certainly would go with it for interest and whatnot. No, well, we thought it was quite a good time, but we hadn't seen the effects of getting hit with Sherman. And it seemed comfortable inside. The fitters seemed to be quite happy with it. I didn't see any wrong with it at all. But the stopping of the ammunition and all that was in the future, as far as I was.
And the people were happy with the gun and the armour?
Well, they didn't know any better, I thought. But, I mean, remember, as I said here again, there was nobody coming back to tell us any stories. And it had been used presumably in the desert by now, by that time. But no, we had no illusion about it.
So you didn't go on Operation Blackhawk or Operation Eagle?
Well,
that was at Bridlington. I think you were at Bridlington then.
I didn't go on them at all because these operations, as far as I'm concerned, were not used for echelon and bringing up stuff and getting it forward and filling up A echelon and filling up A1 echelon. It was just for tanks and procedures.
So there were no A and B echelon training in the exercises? Anything else about Rudson or Bridlington then before you move?
We just enjoyed Bridlington, like we enjoyed Brighton, it was a seaside, it was a great big place for dancing. I was always keen on dancing, of course, so that should be fine.
The next thing then is the move to Warburg Barracks at Aldershot.
Back to the same barracks.
It's supposed to be different, but it's supposed to be Beaumont the first time and Warburg the second, but that may be wrong in the history.
I remember going back there and I remember Well, that was where we went. Was this going back to the meeting?
Yes.
Well, so you went there in March 44 to June 44.
Well, when we were in Brimington, go back to Brimington, we were getting heavily involved in waterproofing the tanks. Although I wasn't with them, I know that we were heavily involved in waterproofing. We did it in Hull. We took them down to Hull, which was just down the road, and the tanks had to go in water and out the other side. And we were heavily, but the regiment was heavily involved in waterproofing. And that was just going back to Oldershot. It was nearly all our waterproofing there.
At Aldershot or Bridlington?
Bridlington was fantastic.
And then what were you doing at Aldershot?
The laundry, that's another thing I was involved with.
Tell me about that. What was it?
Well, laundry. Well, laundry, I can't remember the exact amount, but the soldiers were allowed to send us things back into laundry because it had to come from the quartermaster. So they got a laundry list and they check it out, so they put me in shirts and socks and underwear and things like that. And one of my class had organised this and they all had to go to a laundry in Hull. And we had to take it down and go and collect it. And that was another thing, the laundry. Well, there was the usual problems. Chaps who sent two shirts and only one shirt came back and went, ah, yes. Didn't pay much attention to them, just swept them aside. But then we go back to the laundry and they were fine to them. We were shortlisted and they would make allowances or do something like that. But it was all done through the civilian laundry. This was what happened elsewhere. Okay, I just remember the laundry. Just goes on.
Anything else about Brindleton?
No.
So then Aldershot, what about Aldershot?
Well, Aldershot, then I again, we were just kitting people up, making sure all the kits were full up.
How would you do that? I mean.
Well, a kit parade, of course. Well, kit parade was a regular thing.
So what was a kit parade?
Well, kit parade was everybody laid out the kits and
kit inspection, I might call it, yeah.
Well, kit inspection, you see, and you walk around, you see, where's your this and where's your that, and all of them. And, you know, they're trying to hand them to each other to have them. But eventually, that was what you had to replace these things. If they didn't come and ask you for a replacement, the replacement issue was caught up on a kit inspection. And of course, they were issued with one whether they liked it or not and paid for it.
So the idea was to make sure everyone had everything they might have. Anything else at Aldershot? You were getting near D Day now. I mean, were people.
I remember being in Aldershot, badly going there. We were standing by the door at the camps. We closed down all the messes, you know, everything had to be closed down, sorted out. All the officers were closed down. I can't remember what it is. I met some others who worked with you. I worked with you when we were closing down the mess. You must remember it. You must have gotten out of it. And,
so you were closing all the messes?
Yes, we closed the messes.
So
see, messes, when we were in this country, the sergeant's messes and the officer's messes were part and parcel of daily life. But when we were leaving Aldershot, we were doing all of this stuff, and we were closing them down completely. Now, I can't remember what we did. I was just closing down.
Sort out all the money.
Sort out all the money, close the accounts with the adjutant, and that would be all. The adjutant.
Who was it? I mean, did you have much to do with the adjutant?
We had a lot to do with the adjutant.
Who was the adjutant at that time? How did you relate? I mean, forgetting who it was, how did you relate with him? Why did your job come into contact with theirs?
With the adjutant. Well, the adjutant, any orders that came from the colonel came through the adjutant to the squadron, and eventually from squadron leaders to me. And certain things would have to be done, and they'd be committed by the adjutant. I can't remember who the adjutant was.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Now, any other preparations for D-Day?
No, well, there'd be lots of preparations for the tanks, but no.
Did they still have this G-1098?
One thing I can remember, everything was going into kit bags, of course. The kit bags were coming back to me, because they didn't take kit bags with them when they went into the camps. This was another little job. It doesn't seem much, but I mean, these things were big operations, you see. So all kit bags had to be loaded up. And all they would keep after that would be the backpack, you see. So everything was going into these kit bags, and I took all the kit bags back into stores. And they came with us.
So they went with you, the kit bags, but they were in storage.
In the three-ton trucks. We had a three-ton truck full of them.
Now, what about this? Did you know of the G1098? It's a sort of war established G1098 form, you know, and the war establishment of the whole uni. Would you be aware of that?
I've never seen one. I knew there was an establishment because, I mean, that was why they had to make acting corporals, because they'd gone over the top of the car, and acting sergeants and P, you know, and line sergeant. I mean, so it appeared to me that although I didn't know about it, there was a rule whereby you could have so many sergeants and no more, and if you want to make a sergeant up, you made them acting on P. So you speed as a corporal.
There's also this G1098 was a list of what every item that a unit should have. You weren't aware of that.
That must be done further along the line.
Anything else before you left to go to the camps?
No, I have a brief recollection of being in the tents prior to going on the LSDs, but nothing. A hell of a weather. It was raining cats and dogs. The tanks were leaving from certain areas. They weren't with us, the tank crews. They were on different ships. I was with this thing, the echelons were together. The B echelon and the A echelon were together.
Now, could you just explain what the B echelon and A echelon are?
B echelon was the echelon which was forward, nearer the tanks. B echelon was behind them, being supplied by the Royal Army Service Corps. You see, and anything from the Royal Army Service Corps to us, and we were filling up A echelon. When we got to war, we discovered that there was an A1 echelon. These things were too big, B echelon and A echelon. So we had an A1 echelon with Captain Melbourne in charge of that. And
we'll come to that, because that's something you introduced when you were out there. So how did what do you remember of loading the ships, and where did you leave from?
We just went on with the trucks. They went in on LSD. And we just went up and went across.
Do you know what date you went across?
Well,
I think they went around the 15th of June,
yeah,
I think.
9 or 10. I'm talking about D Day now.
D plus 10,
D
yeah.
I agree about that. We went ashore in relatively calm weather. We didn't get wet. And the tanks went with us, remember. And we went off the beach, along there, and into this field, not far behind Courcelles, so we're
They went up, yes, into a field outside Cully.
And
they were there from the 17th of, of June to the 26th of June.
Exactly. I remember it.
About a week. Yeah. Now, what do you remember of that period at Cully?
Well, again, we went up to this area and we were billeted in a field, and you slept all round the perimeter. There was nobody in the centre of the field. The centre of the field was, we didn't have to walk across it. We were walking around perimeters, staying in perimeters there. We were then, by this time, the cookhouse was set up now.
Now, who was in this field? Was it the whole squadron, or the whole of the regiment, or just B echelon?
The B echelons. I don't know where the tanks were. They couldn't be far away, by the way, but they weren't with us. They weren't in these fields. The training, my training was just supplying, making sure everybody got fed.
Now, hang on, so you were all round this field by the hedges. Yep. Did you dig in?
No. We didn't dig in, guaranteed. We were sitting around these fields here, and it was beautiful weather. And again, we were back like what we were in all the places we've been between 1941. Here we were in France now. There was a great big war going on, and we were sitting in a field. Quite lovely it was, and again it was unreal, because you just got to the stage where they're never going to use us. We are certainly going to be used for the victory parade in Berlin. And that was the Scotland as I remember it, truly. And then, of course, the time came. There was no air raid on us.
What about
there wasn't any field of danger. There was
now you're overseas. What about the supply of food? Because I believe you went on to composition rations, compo rations.
Yes, we went on these compo rations fairly quickly. And we went on to the American ones, of course. That was the 40-man pack ones.
Could you explain, because people don't know now, what compo rations were and how the system worked for you?
The 40-man packs suited us. There were all kind of numbers of packs. And I'm saying 40-man, you did 40 men for one day and 40 men for, one man for 14 days, you see? And of course, with the 5 men in a tank, we were one short. We just had to get them a box, a 40-man pack, you see? And they just had to scoop out somewhere. But there was a lot of battling going on after that. These are packs we got as I remember.
So they were a box? Were they a wooden box? I mean,
no, we had wooden corners and struts on them. That was all. And they were lettered. They were lettered A, Bs and Cs. you know, that these American banks had letters in them. And of course, very quickly people got to find out what was in A, what was in B, and what was in C. I always remember that the second in command always had to get the sum because there was fruit in it that he particularly liked. There was this kind of thing.
So, what would be in a typical. I mean, perhaps you might not be able to remember the letter, but can you remember what was in.
There was fruit in them, there was meat in them, you know, whatever the meat was to be, there was tins of the meat. There were cigarettes in them as well. You know, the ration, of course, was 7 a day for a soldier in France. So, these cigarettes were in there. Mostly they were we got them in a player's tin, which you had to push a little thing along and then squeeze it round, and the tin foil came off, and there was 50 cigarettes in there, which was one more that they were supposed to get. But then they were getting maybe a little less rations with a 14-man pack to a thing. We used to get 3-man packs, and we dished them out as well. Of course, we went abroad with a certain hard tack thing, which kept us for the first 3 days, eh? Everybody lived off.
What was that?
I can't remember.
You don't remember what it was?
But I remember we had them, and we didn't have to do anything for so many days. We lived off this.
The compo rations, was that all you ever issued, or would the cooks still be cooking?
No, the cooks weren't cooking with rations at all.
And did they do much cooking during active service? I mean,
yes, well, a little. But I could come with that later.
Okay. So there's compo ration. Anything else about your job during that first period in the field?
People lost things and I replaced them. People need their shoes repaired and I did this. I had an armourer working for me by this time.
What was the role of the armourer?
The armourer was to check personal weapons that were non-functional, and he repaired them and did this thing, take up a firing pin. And of course, we had to carry his spare parts as well. He had a spare part list. So we had an armourer with us all the time, and he looked at. I had a cobbler with us all the time, and he looked after, and he'd tell me he shot a size 9 soles or some soles, and I'd be indenting back through the quarter, the lieutenant quartermaster, for my things, and then they would come up, I would get them and have them handy. So that whatever we needed, we had. Can't think of anybody else we had.
So were you now in charge of something that hadn't been important to England, ammunition supply?
No. The ammunition supply must have been done from RHQ, from the headquarters.
Right. So you were just food and clothing and things?
That's right. But I didn't have to put down so much. I had the trucks, I knew what I had in trucks, and I had to make sure these trucks were full of shells for the tanks. We had the diesel tanks, we had the diesel and petrol carriers, and petrol lorries and diesel lorries. They were mostly done in jelly cans.
So, hang on. So you did have the ammunition?
Yes, I can't remember.
You didn't order it, but you had it.
We had it. I had it in the echelon. So you take the echelon, ready to give to the tanks, as we did not long after the
trip. Would you transship the loads from lorry to lorry, or from B to A echelon, or would you just give them the lorry?
No, we brought the lorries forward, and the lorries went backwards. In other words, if you were in B echelon, you weren't permanently in B echelon. You could be in E echelon next week. Because we would take up so many lorries, and so many empty lorries would come back. And when we took the lorries up, we emptied them out into the tanks, and then we came back empty. And by that time, anyone full was coming up to A echelon again.
But you would stay with B echelon?
I was always with, well, I was really mostly with A, but I suppose I should have been with B.
Right. Now, so what's the next thing you remember? I mean, they were outside Cully, and
people by this time were going all over the place, looking at areas where Shermans had been knocked out, and going to a field not far away from where we were at Cully, and we knew that two or three Shermans were there with their guns down, and I gave a call to them.
And what did they think of that?
Well, I don't think they were all that enamoured, but again, they were just. We were now just learning the facts, the real facts of life, I think.
So, did you actually go and see...
I didn't go. I saw the tanks, but I didn't go on any particular parade. I had to be careful, because with the type of training I had, which was more or less a little bit of everything all the way through, I used to go and listen in on little conversations, listen in to the squad leaders talking to the tank commanders, listening into this and whatnot. But and I don't, but I saw an awful lot of Sherman tanks with holes in them. People then realised that things were coming to a sharp point, you know.
So anything, what about, did you visit Cully, the local village?
No, I didn't do much visiting there. One thing from this area, where we are at this moment in time, the thing that's quite vivid in my mind is the day the squadron, the regiment, went into action.
Now, that would be, this is Operation Epsom on the 26th of June, 1944. What do you remember of that?
The regiment moved from that area, in that field. It was actually, the tanks weren't with us, they must have been round the side of another field. And the squadrons were going up to cross the main Colne Bailio Road to go over through the wheat fields with 15 Scottish divisions to go down to Sheux, C-H-E-U-X. That day was it. And I remember the colonel speaking to all the... He carried everybody together. Now, when the colonel spoke, he only spoke to tank crews. I mean, quartermasters and echelons. By this time, we had ABJ Scott, of course.
I'll come to him, yeah.
He was a colonel. And he was an old soldier. And as I say, he just... Dr. Tank Cruise. But I usually happen to get in on the tank cruise, and I remember him telling them we were going to have a battle inoculation. An experience of going into battle. And he talked and talked and talked. And I also remember them moving out. B Squadron was leading.
Do you remember anything else he said?
No, other than the fact that.
Was he inspiring, or was he just dry, or what was he?
Well, he wasn't the kind of a one that would sail. He wouldn't be a sailman, no. He was a quiet kind of a person. But he made sure that nobody went forward into this action without the knowledge that there were going to be things were going to be hard, people were going to die, and it was going to be tough. But he didn't give them, you know, England and St. George kind of stuff. He wasn't that kind of a man, really.
What did you think of Scott? We might as well pick that up now.
I thought Lieutenant Colonel Scott was a first-class soldier, absolutely on the ball. Totally devoted to taking his tanks where he had to take them to and doing what he was told to do. And other than that, that was him. He was tunnel viewing that. The echelons at the back, everybody else were there, but he was interested in the people who were going, the sharp end people going in to do this job. Germans he hated completely. He just couldn't stand Germans.
Why not? I mean.
Must be going back further than me. I know this much. Germans, he just didn't have anything for Germans at all. I never really got that. I talked to him a lot afterwards.
Was it?
Eventually, he asked me to stay in the army and go to the Enniskillen Dragoon Guards with him, and he would make sure I would get onto the commissioned quartermaster role.
What was he like as a person? You know,
he was difficult to know. He wasn't very. He didn't talk. He wouldn't be like me. He wouldn't gab on. You know, a few words. A man, a few words. You know. Very few ones, really.
How old was he then? Was he an older man?
Yes, well, he looked old to me. Of course, everybody looked old. I was never good to me anyway. I would have liked to probably... I had so much individual training. I mean, I'd done so much. I mean, I haven't mentioned it before, but I once twice went to Octu boards.
No, you hadn't mentioned that. What was that?
Scott sent me to one, I remember.
When was that?
I went to one in, I can't remember where one. One was Aldershot, one was Cranwell, and one was somewhere else. But I always went to these options. I was quite happy to be commissioned as an officer, but absolutely determined I wasn't to be an officer in anything but the tank corps. Now, at the time I was doing this, they were equally determined somewhere in the British hierarchy that they were looking for young officers from tank regiments who were going to go into infantry battalions. Because about four or five of my friends from Dundee, who joined up in 1939, all ended up as second lieutenants in the Black Watch. I think, myself, that the thinking was that he'd have enough experience in tank training that it would be beneficial for them as infantry officers in charge of a platoon. However, I was adamant, and at the end of this Octu course, you had to sign a declaration that you would accept a commission in any branch of His Majesty's forces. And I wouldn't sign this thing, so I landed back in the regiment. If I thought I'd have gone back to the fighting forward, I would have done it gladly and gone in a tank and taken my chances. If I thought I'd have gone to another tank regiment, I might have done it. But there was no way was I going to be commissioned into any other thing at all.
Session number 19806, Tommy Wilmot, Reel 7.